Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Have you heard that the American Rescue Plan of 2021 is going to make health insurance coverage more affordable for many folks in Connecticut by virtually eliminating or vastly reducing monthly premiums for people with low and moderate incomes and providing new financial help for people with somewhat higher incomes who can face high premiums? If you're ready to take advantage of these savings, Access Health CT just opened a special enrollment period running through August 15th, and we're going to introduce you to the CEO of Connecticut's Exchange to tell you all about it. Then we're going to hear from the Domestic Violence Crisis Center, supporting individuals on their journey to safety by providing support for individuals who are experiencing abuse in personal relationships with free victim services. And we'll invite you to support the cause at DVCC's upcoming Voices of Courage Spring Luncheon. And we'll close celebrating Connecticut educators as we wrap up Teacher Appreciation Week with an ambassador from Teach Connecticut, who's going to explain how this program is bringing folks from the workforce to our classrooms and helping former educators jump back into their calling. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. The Connecticut Psychological Association is hosting a free and open community event to discuss the mental health impact of the pandemic, warning signs for when to seek help, basic information about different mental health disciplines and practices, everyday strategies to improve mood and well-being, how and where to find qualified mental health professionals, other resources, and more. It's coming up on Wednesday, May 12th at 8 p.m., and it's free and open to the public. It's going to be held virtually, and a Zoom link will be sent to anyone who registers. Just go to CONNPSYCH. That's consych.org. Well, this is going to be the first of a couple of segments this morning where we're meeting new friends to the award-winning For the People, although Access Health CT is a longtime friend. We've been there for Access Health CT, and Access Health CT has been here for Connecticut now for a few years, and we're so pleased to make the acquaintance of their new leader, James Michel. James, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to discuss how Access Health is moving forward to help Connecticut residents.
Yeah, so as regular listeners to the program know, and I hope folks listening who may have heard of Access Health CT but don't know much about it will get a great kind of crash course today. Access Health CT's mission is to increase the number of insured Connecticut residents and improve healthcare quality, lower costs, and reduce health disparities. They're the marketplace for health insurance, the Connecticut Exchange, if you will, and the one of the newest things to happen, of course, is the announcement of this new enrollment period that we're going to be talking about in just a few minutes. But the next newest thing was the arrival of James Michel. James, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've come into this position.
Thank you very much. I joined the Exchange back when it first started in 2013. I left Aetna. Prior to that, I was at Aetna for about close to 9 years. Mm-hmm. And then I joined the Exchange as the director of operations, and then I became COO 2 years later. Then I became the head of finance, CFO, or director of finance, for after 2 years I've been in charge of operations. Then about a year and a half after that, the board asked me to become CEO. And I've been CEO since July of 2018. Mm-hmm. So it's been quite an experience. My experience between operations and finance, I've quite a bit of exposure to who we are, what we do, and the board felt that I was in a very good position to lead the organization through the changes that we that we were going to be going through.
Yeah, quite a unique and very robust background, and a very astute board to recognize that you bring so much to the table. And I dare say, having been on since 2018, your power is lasting. Some other former CEOs have come and gone a little bit quicker. Some to much greater things in Washington. Speaking of the first CEO, I believe. Let's talk a little bit about what you've seen over the past 18 months or so. You've gone from a place where Axis Health CT was beginning to really enjoy an upward trajectory of folks signing on. Folks were becoming very, very familiar with this throughout the state of Connecticut. They were calling, they were getting quality health care, lower prices, that your agency was fulfilling its goal. And then all of a sudden, COVID-19 hit the state. But Axis Health CT really seemed to really bring the power of their brand to the state of Connecticut throughout this current health crisis as well. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. When COVID came out of nowhere and started impacting the country, but more specifically for our purpose, the Connecticut, one of the first things we did, we opened up a special open enrollment back in April of last year to give Connecticut residents who were uninsured to come to the exchange and purchase insurance. And this was a special change we had to put in place. We had to work with our carriers, the insurance department, to make sure they were okay with it, to give Connecticut residents access to health insurance who did not have it. The people were losing their jobs. People who did not buy health insurance during open enrollment for 2020 did not buy it because they didn't need it. Now, all of a sudden, there's an urgency. So we opened it up to make sure that they knew they could get health insurance to access health. You know, we saw upwards of 5,000 customers came in to buy health insurance through the exchange, through the special enrollment. And that was very helpful to Connecticut residents. Then as the year went on, we started working with other state agencies as the pandemic grew and expanded. We started to work to support other state agencies that needed access to our marketing and outreach. So we work with Department of Public Health so that they could reach the hard-to-reach populations in Connecticut, which is what we had been doing since we started. So we developed these various skills to reach the hard-to-reach populations in rural as well as in the big cities. To make sure that that they were aware the vaccines were available to help them out as well. So we've been trying to be as helpful as we possibly can, leverage any skills and knowledge that we have to help the state of Connecticut move forward through this very unprecedented pandemic.
I also have to believe, James, that since the special enrollment period last year, you have received countless correspondence from people who were able to maybe get health insurance for the very first time or for the first time in a long time. And then sadly, they may have been touched by COVID-19, and thanks to their to their policy through Access Health CT, they really only had to suffer the slings and arrows of the virus and not the financial fallout that could have potentially happened had they not been insured.
Yeah, absolutely. We get notes on a regular basis, not just from COVID, but recently, more simply, COVID patients making us aware how much they benefited from the health insurance that they did not have, but have it through Access Health. But also folks who are newly insured, and because of that, they went and got maybe a first physical in 5 or 10 years, and found out that they had a chronic illness. we had a young lady who reached out to us saying that because of us, she went and got her physicals, and they discovered a tumor in her brain. The doctor said within the next 6 months she would have died. Because of that, she got it taken care of, because first of all, she had insurance. Because she had health insurance, all of the preventative medical procedures are covered without any type of copay or out of pocket cost to our customers. Because of that, she was able to get a physical, get all the tests done, and something was picked up, and then now she's alive and doing well. Doctors made it clear, without that, she would have probably died within 6 months. And she sent us a very nice letter, making us aware that, again, we did a lot of outreach in hard-to-reach populations and communities, and we got to her to one of those outreach, and she went, got the insurance, got the physical, and now she's still alive. Yeah. Alive. Her kids and her husband are able to enjoy her. Hopefully for the rest of her life.
That's inspiring. Also, James, under your tenure, you have seen a very positive expansion of services to the younger population who, at the beginning of Access Health CT, there was some guardedness, some worry that maybe not enough young people were going to be able to come in and supplement the plans so that everyone could get the kind of coverage that they needed at an affordable price. Under your leadership, you have seen an exceptional turnout of young people who are probably all buying health insurance for the first time, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we have a very targeted marketing and outreach for what we have dubbed the Invincibles. These are young folks between the age of 26 and 35. Who do not think they need health insurance until they need it. So we have developed very targeted and specific marketing outreach to make them aware of potential risk to them and their families if they don't have health insurance. And as you indicated, we have had great success to have these young folks come in and buy insurance to Access Health to protect themselves and in some cases their families as well. One of the things that we do as well, as young folks roll off their parents' plan, the ACA allowed you to stay in your parents' plan until you're 26. So what we do targeted outreach and marketing to that group as well. Now, so we know who they are. We know when their birth is going to make them ineligible to stay in their parents' plan. So we start marketing to them as early as possible. So that could maintain health insurance after they come off the parents' plan.
Mm-hmm. And also under your leadership, the Access Health CT is now just not underwriting or help. I mean, I shouldn't say underwriting. You're not the provider, but you are facilitating plans for entire small businesses and the business community, not just individuals.
Absolutely, our small business health program have grown dramatically over the last 2.5, 3 years because we have put more resources into it to do marketing and outreach. And we, as you know, the backbone of our economy in Connecticut in particular are small businesses. And it, for them, cash flow is king. So we have to make them aware and make it affordable for them. And make them aware of what's available in the exchange. There are tax credits they could take advantage of if they enroll under certain conditions. We have grown the membership of about 300 to 400% since I took over. But the small business part of our effort is an area that I'm particularly interested in, and I put a lot of resources, invest a lot of resources in marketing and outreach, and also in new technology to make sure small businesses have access to health insurance.
Well, with 300% growth, it sounds like you the dart hit the target right on the bullseye. So congratulations for that.
Thank you much, and there's
James
a lot more
Mitchell.
To do, but Thank you very much. Appreciate
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So let's get people signed up. Come on. They've got till August 15th now. How about that? Here we are. We're broadcasting this program on the 9th. We're recording it here on the 6th. And the program, this new special enrollment period started on the 1st. And the phones are ringing. The computers are busy. Your staff is signing people up. What else do folks need to know about the special enrollment period?
Sure. First and foremost, great thanks to our elected officials and in D.C. who advocated for the American Rescue Plan because the savings to Connecticut residents are enormous. We are anticipating and conservatively estimating, based on our current customer base, an additional more than $85 million for the year will come to Connecticut residents to help them pay and lower their monthly premium costs. Now, some of the savings range between zero because some of our customers, because of their income level and size of the family, they are already max out on the subsidies. But we have others who prior to the American Rescue Plan, did not qualify for any subsidy. Those are folks who are making above 400% of the federal poverty level. Mm-hmm. Now, that cliff, as we call it, has been removed. So they're qualified for health insurance. Some of them are currently paying over $3,000 a month for health insurance. Their costs will go down to about $8 a month. So that's over $3,000 savings on a monthly basis for some families because of the American Rescue Plan. Again, that's not an extreme example, but it is a small group of folks who will qualify for that much savings, but a good chunk of our customers will save over $1,000 a month because of the American Rescue Plan. So we would encourage all of our Connecticut residents who are underinsured or uninsured, or maybe even currently insured through Access Health, go to our website, accesshealthct.com. Started this past Saturday on May 1st to see if you qualify for any additional subsidy. We know most of them will qualify for this enhanced subsidy, which will lower their monthly costs for what they pay for health insurance. With some of the savings are dramatic, some of them are not as dramatic, but either way. We know our customers will save money on a monthly basis if they take the step and go to our website or call our call center at 855-805-4325. As you said, the phones are ringing. We staffed up our call center in anticipation of the additional calls coming in for people who are looking to take advantage of this additional savings for themselves and their families.
Yeah, and people can even get in-person help in New Haven at the Project Access on York
Absolutely.
Street. Lots of opportunities. AccessHealthCT.com. If you don't like using the mouse and the keyboard, they have live chat for you at that location. Toll-free, 855-805-4325, including on Saturdays, select Saturdays. You can contact your insurance broker or show up to 63 York Street in New Haven at Project Access for in-person help. Connecticut's special enrollment period through Access Health CT began May 1st and goes through August 15th, and we are so pleased to learn all about it and all the great things that are happening with Access Health CT and how they are helping to increase the number of insureds in Connecticut, improve healthcare quality, lower costs, and reduce health disparities with their leader, James Michel. James, great to make your acquaintance and to talk to you after seeing you a few times, in the governor's press conferences. And I'll look forward to talking with you again. Thank you so much for being on the program. All right, hitting the midpoint here with a brand new friend. So pleased to make the acquaintance of Suzanne Adam, executive director of the Domestic Violence Crisis Center. This organization is there to support individuals on their journey to safety. They advocate for those who are experiencing abuse in personal relationships and provide multiple services and professional staff to help anyone experiencing any level of domestic violence. And they'll assist you in building a safer environment for the well-being of yourself and your family. All their victim services are free and confidential, and all services offered are multicultural and multilingual. And with that in mind, we are going to ask you to support this organization while interacting with some dynamic folks and checking out a dynamic keynote at their Voices of Courage Spring Luncheon. It's coming up on May 21st from 11:30 to 1. They're bringing in Donna Ferrato, who's an award-winning photojournalist, author, and domestic violence prevention advocate. We're going to tell you a lot more about that in the second half of our program. But in the meantime, let's meet Suzanne. Suzanne, thank you so much for being part of the program this morning. So great to meet you, and so great to be able to help you promote this organization doing so much down there in Southern Fairfield County since 1980, huh?
Absolutely. 40 years. Thank you so much for having me, John. I'm so thrilled to be here with you today.
So let's talk about the humble beginnings of this way back in 1980, when we were still deciding whether it was going to be rock or new wave that was going to be part of our radio listening world here. The situation was already getting bad here in Connecticut, and you your organization kind of stepped into the fray bravely. Let's talk about how far this Domestic Violence Crisis Center has come since those early beginnings.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, since 1980, we are one of our founding leaders, Pat Phillips, would take people, victims, in the station wagon of her car and drive them up 95, bringing them to safety with children and her children sometimes in their pajamas, and supporting people. And what she realized is that she could do more than just getting people in a car and bringing them to a safe space outside of our local catchment area, and started the Domestic Violence Crisis Center in Stamford. In about the late 90s, the Crisis Center in Stamford and the Women's Center in Norwalk merged to become two organizations becoming one. And then we were able to serve a broader audience, Norwalk, Stamford, New Canaan, Darien, Westport, Wilton, and Weston. And being able to provide victim services, raising awareness, and prevention education and training for 40 years is pretty incredible, to say that we're able to continue to do that.
Yeah, so you're a standalone agency, but part of a really broad and responsive network of agencies across the state here, large and small. These days, your work is most important, especially with the awareness in the community of unfortunate victims who, despite what they're going through, there is a realization, and thanks in great part to your agency's education, people are learning that things that they might have thought beforehand were just behaviors that they had to tolerate in an intimate partner, a husband, a loved one, that these are actually kind of clinically defined as abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse. It's not just about striking out and making physical contact. And the awareness of that is really driving a lot of people to your organization and others across the state, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, the Domestic Violence Crisis Center is part of a greater organization that you spoke about called the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence. So anyone who hears this call, this interview, can reach out, whether you are in Bridgeport, Storrs, Connecticut, New London, Litchfield, Wilton, Weston, Darien, New Canaan, Stamford. We are all here to help you. So that's really important to know, that people know that help is available. But intimate partner violence, domestic abuse, broader term, is a pattern of coercive control. It's behavior that can include physical abuse, emotional abuse, the use of technology, very often sexual abuse or financial abuse. It's pervasive. It's a life-threatening crime that affects thousands of individuals across Connecticut, regardless of their age, gender, economic status, race, ethnicity, religion, who they love, you know, or education. And victims are very often left feeling scared, confused, dependent, and insecure about their ability to survive on their own, financially or otherwise.
And your victims are predominantly, your constituency is predominantly women, but I do know that you know, men are increasingly you know, standing up against intimate partner violence and emotional and verbal abuse as well. Individuals in the trans community and others, you're able to welcome them all, right?
We are welcoming of anyone, however they identify themselves and whoever they love. Historically, look at who we've researched and who the studies have been about, have been across traditional lines, right? Mm-hmm. With 80% of women being the victims and the typical abusive partner being male. And that is history. And what we know is that domestic violence, whether you're a victim or an offender, crosses all gender, race, ethnicity, and anyone has an opportunity, unfortunately, to be a victim. It doesn't matter how much you know. Domestic violence is pervasive. It's quiet. It's a secret. We don't fall in love with abusive partners. We don't fall in love with monsters. We get to know people who become our friends. And over time, that relationship changes. And it is subtle. And it is slow. And that is something that we are also here to help raise awareness for people to understand the dynamics of domestic violence and help people with a victim-centered space, which means the victims are the experts in their own lives, and they are best able to tell us what they need. So we're able to safety plan with people to help them set their own individual goals for safety and well-being. For instance, someone may come to us through our safe houses and need to find permanent housing, but they also require legal advocacy, or they need to retain a protective order, or their child needs support and counseling to get over the trauma and healing that they experience at home. And our staff can address those needs for people and provide trauma-informed counseling and support to help them heal emotionally. And as you stated, all of our services are free and confidential, and they're offered in the multicultural and multilingual way that people need.
Now, tell us a little bit about your staff and the wonderful people who come to the table for DVCC in a volunteer capacity, warmliner, crisis response volunteers, others who may serve on your board or work for and support activities like this upcoming Voices of Courage. You've got a pretty broad array of both highly educated, trained, and sensitive experts, as well as equally sensitive and responsive volunteers, don't you?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. We are so lucky to have the board, the advisory board, the staff and volunteers, and the broader community who is supporting the Domestic Violence Crisis Center. Within our organization, we do have individuals within their respective expertise. So within our legal department, we have those who have the degrees in criminal justice, and they're our attorneys. In our counseling department, we have people who are licensed clinical social workers. Within our, as well as for children counseling, within our housing, we have individuals who are social workers and are able to support people within the housing needs. In our housing instability, as well as our financial programs, we have individuals who have degrees in finance. The same goes for our board. We are very lucky to have a cross-section of business people, a philanthropist, doctors, lawyers, incredible volunteers who are able to support not only the day-to-day services that a victim needs, but also reaching that broader community and supporting to create a safer community, because we truly believe that a safer community is an informed community.
Well, part of creating a safer community is also making sure that we're taking the best possible care we can of the children who witness domestic violence or who are part of that pattern in their homes. We're going to come back and talk more about how the Domestic Violence Crisis Center helps children, specifically how you can work with them and how DVCC prevents domestic violence and making how they're making a positive impact on the community, including providing you with an invitation to support this organization yourself through their Voices of Courage Spring Luncheon. It's coming up May 20th with the main program beginning at noon. They're ramping things up at about 11:30. We're going to tell you all about that, as well as reminding you their website, dvccct.org, is the place to go to learn all about them, to find out more in depth about the range of services that they provide, and to get your reservation for the Voices of Courage Luncheon. We're going to be back with their executive director, Suzanne Adam. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, did you know May is National Foster Care Month? It's a time to consider the many children and youth in need of loving homes and the professionals dedicated to finding foster families. During this period, especially as individuals and families emerge from the long-term challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, there's an ever-pressing need for foster families in Connecticut. Across our state on any given day, there are nearly 4,000 children and youth in foster care, and there are nearly 600 more in need of loving foster homes. Most are over the age of 13 years old. If you'd like information about becoming a foster or adoptive parent, you could start by calling 888-KID-HERO. There's no obligation, just information. Or you can just visit ct.gov/DCF. Hey, thanks for sticking with us. You too, Suzanne. Suzanne Adams is with us. She's executive director of the Domestic Violence Crisis Center, serving a number of communities in southwestern Connecticut, Norwalk, Stamford, New Canaan, Darien, Westport, Weston, and Wilton, part of the Greater Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence, sister agencies all over the state of Connecticut. They specifically working on programs involving victim services, awareness raising, and preventative education and training. So, Suzanne, we did promise that we would talk a little bit more specifically about how your agency helps children who are impacted by or witness domestic violence. A lot of times we tend to want to call them out and put them into a special class, or think that there's just special agencies or state or municipal services that are specific to children, but in fact they kind of come with the package when the phone call is made to one of your crisis lines, or a referral is made to you through the courts or law enforcement. By the way, the 24-hour hotline, if you're listening and need domestic violence support right now, is toll-free, 888-774-2900. So, Suzanne, tell us a little bit about how DVCC works with kids.
Happy to. First of all, it's important to know that children who grow up witnessing domestic violence experience their own unique trauma as secondary victims. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, more than 15 million children in the United States live in homes in which domestic violence has happened at least once. And these children are at greater risk for repeating the cycle as adults by entering into abusive relationships or becoming abusers themselves. And studies show that the sooner a child gets help, the better his or her chances are becoming a mentally and physically healthy adult. And DVCC is committed to helping children of domestic violence and has dedicated a youth and family child counselor on staff to provide trauma-informed counseling and support.
And when we talk about prevention of domestic violence, interestingly and coincidentally, it starts with young people, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Coming back to my statement of an informed community is a safer community. And if young children know what to recognize, That is an incredible piece of the puzzle. So DBCC believes the prevention of relationship violence in our society truly begins with the education of our youth. Our team of experienced educators provide tools for the youth to help them learn how to maintain healthy relationships and solve conflicts peacefully. We recognize it is imperative to educate young people about safe, healthy behaviors in addition to the warning signs and how to intervene when they know something is not okay.
Very good. So it's been a busy year, 2020. COVID has caused many, many more people than normally might be forced to be together, whether it's intimate partners, spouses, family members, who might otherwise just be able to walk out the door and go somewhere else in the event that they're facing a threat or actual abusive situations. Tell us a little bit about what happened with DVCC in 2020 and the various ways that you have been and continue to make a positive impact in the communities that you serve and the entire state at large.
Absolutely. Yes, it has been quite a year for all of us. Overall, the Domestic Violence Crisis Center has seen a 17% increase in the number of victims, which means both new clients and those who have needed us before are now returning to our services because their situation had changed and that they needed our help. We had a 50% increase in the number of our counseling services provided, 125% increase in the number of our advocacy services. And during the first 2 months alone during the pandemic, the numbers to our Spanish hotline language doubled, which is pretty significant. What we do know is that the number of domestic violence calls to the police and arrests within our catchment towns did vary. Some of the decrease in calls were due to concerns, and some cases simply misinformation about the community, about what the police and court system's ability was. One of the biggest areas of need that we found within our clients were for basic needs like food, toiletries, and diapers during COVID. Food insecurity and fear of becoming homeless has a huge barrier to a victim in finding safety. And domestic violence, as we know, is the leading cause of homelessness among women and children in the United States. And one thing that really impacted domestic violence victims during this COVID pandemic time was that the housing shortage. As people moved out of New York and into Fairfield County, locals moved around. And there was and continues to be a serious lack of affordable housing. For a victim of domestic violence, having a safe, affordable place to move can mean the difference between life and death. And our advocates have done an amazing job of connecting our eligible clients to public rental assistance program. And since the beginning of this pandemic, we've helped 55 families find new permanent housing since last July. And as quarantine restrictions have lifted last summer, we started to see an uptick again in clients. We know that people are having some hesitations about reaching out, but we certainly anticipate that with the number of vaccinations and schools and communities opening, and as the state reopens, certainly more people will be reaching out to us as well.
Very good. You spoke about the kind of explosion of the telehealth phenomenon has not bypassed domestic violence services. And of course, we probably should remind folks that if they are in a situation where they need help but can't really make the call, Connecticut fairly recently has initiated a texting response program for those that are being threatened.
Absolutely. They can text as well as they can call. And again, it's that 24-hour hotline, 888-774-2900.
So, folks, if you've heard something that's inspiring to you and you would like to make yourself available to assist, I'm sure, as we talked about, there are volunteer opportunities. But one of the ways you can also do it, you want to brief us on that?
Absolutely. The Domestic Violence Crisis Center's 19th annual Voices of Courage of Luncheon will take place Thursday, May 20th. The program itself will open at 11:30, but start at noon. And our keynote speaker is Donna Ferrato, who is an award-winning photojournalist. She's an author, a domestic violence prevention advocate, and a feminist. And Donna's work was selected as one of Time Magazine's 100 most influential images of all time. Her powerful images and the stories behind them have helped to bring domestic violence out of the shadows and into the light. And attendees will have the opportunity to purchase a special Voices of Courage box lunch from Odalise, which is available for pickup at either Darien or Westport. And we're so grateful to Odalise as they'll be donating a percentage of their sales and the lunches back to DVCC. And we also will have a wonderful silent auction that will open on May 14th. And again, if anyone would like to learn more about it, you can reach us at our website at www.dvcct.org.
Great. In closing, Suzanne, we did mention if folks, for whatever reason, may not be financially equipped to even make the nominal ticket purchase for this event, but they do want to make a difference if they reside in or near the communities that you serve. Can you just let people know what other types of volunteer opportunities might be available for them at DVCC?
Oh my goodness. We are so grateful for anyone donating their time, their talent. Some people may have an extra bag of diapers that they haven't used that they're welcome to donate, or an extra box of crayons that they purchased for their child that they never got to. There are so many different ways, even just spending time with individuals or sitting with someone and helping them write that resume or playing with a child at the playground. There are so many different ways to get involved. All of our services are free and confidential. Those who want to work directly with victims will need to go through some training, and it's wonderful and engaging, and we have a wonderful staff to do that. But if people don't have that time, share your ideas, share your resources, let your neighbor know if you recognize that something's going on, that help is available. Simply volunteering your time and spending time with those you know to help them know that help is available or that you're worried about them is an incredible way to make an impact in our community.
And once again, if you possibly can, it make it worth your while to attend the Voices of Courage Spring Luncheon. It's coming up May 20th. The activity start at 11:30, and you can get inspired yourself by their keynote, Donna Ferrato, award-winning photojournalist, author, and domestic violence prevention advocate. Take advantage of the wonderful box lunch from Odalise, and you can find out all about that and all the great work that Executive Director Suzanne Adam and her team at Domestic Violence Crisis Center does at dvcct.org. The Domestic Violence Crisis Center is here to support you on your journey to safety. If you are the victim of domestic or intimate partner violence, they'll advocate for you and their multiple services and professional staff will support you at any level of domestic violence and assist you in building a safer environment for the well-being of yourself and your family. All these services are free and confidential, and all services offered are multicultural and multilingual. Consider supporting them with a donation or participating in their upcoming event or as a volunteer. Suzanne, thank you so much for your time this morning. Good luck with the event, and we'll be talking to you soon. Well, I can tell you that the guest that we have to close out the show today is very much appreciated by a lot of listeners of the award-winning For the People. Lauren Danner is with us. She is a Teach Connecticut ambassador. And if you remember, she was with us last year. We celebrated the fact that she also was a Connecticut Teacher of the Year, as well as a Teacher of the Year in North Branford when she was working there. Now she's devoting this year her full energies to recruiting for Teach Connecticut, but she was so kind to be able to offer some tips to parents and caregivers of students who are just starting this new journey with no light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, on how they were going to navigate this COVID world. And here we are almost a year later, Lauren. And well, as we talked before we went on the air this morning, there's been a little bit of inconsistency and a requirement for maximum flexibility with our student constituencies across the state of Connecticut, but now we are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel, or in many cases we're out of the end of the tunnel from an education perspective here in the state, especially for our kind of pre-K to 12 audience. How have you been doing?
Hi, John. It's so nice to speak with you again today, and thank you again for having me. Yes, I've been doing well. As you mentioned, a lot of flexibility this year for sure with teachers in the state of Connecticut. Connecticut's actually been a little bit, I think, ahead of the game in terms of being able to see kids back into our classrooms full-time in person. A lot of our states across the country are now just beginning that process. So, you know, there's a lot to be proud of here in the state of Connecticut.
Very good. Well, also, we do want to dedicate this segment and send our gratitude and thanks and our love to educators everywhere here in Connecticut, no matter where you teach. We are on the tail end of Teacher Appreciation Week, which ran May 3rd through 7th. And man, if there was ever a year to appreciate teachers, 2020 was it. So and hopefully that appreciation will continue as we move forward in this brave new world, and as you know, the vaccine this is going to be a brand new thing for a lot of educators this year, as in-school vaccine clinics begin to ramp up in the coming days. We saw just 24 hours before we recorded this segment, Canada has opened up the Pfizer vaccine to youths 12 to 15, and America is expected to do the same. So lots more to do in terms of this pandemic, but mostly it's all good news. So that's great. The other good news is that there are rich opportunities here in Connecticut for teachers, and that's where Teach Connecticut comes in. Let's talk about what that is all about for people who may have heard of it but think, oh, Teach Connecticut, I can't be a teacher. That's pretty much totally wrong, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So in terms of Teach Connecticut and the plethora of resources that are available out there, there's really two types of categories of people who are thinking about teaching. The first category is, you know, I'm interested and curious about teaching, but I'm not quite sure if it's a good career fit for me. And, you know, connecting with Teach Connecticut is a great first step in terms of learning more about what teaching is like on a day-to-day basis. So you can certainly go to our website, teach.org, and you'll find a variety of resources such as connecting with teachers, and you can participate in advising calls just to learn more about the day-to-day schedule and any questions that you might have answered. And then there's also a ton of resources such as stories that teachers have written, articles, videos. And then, you know, the second category is really for the people who have made that decision that, yes, I really do want to pursue teaching. Then Teach Connecticut is really there to support you from start to finish on your pathway to becoming a teacher. And so if you utilize our resources, and again, these are all free resources, right, available on our website, you can connect with teachers that will help you to get started on that process of becoming certified within the state of Connecticut. So there's a variety of resources that we have, such as our one-on-one advising coach calls. We have guides about how to become certified, application checklists when you do apply to educator prep programs. You know, we do have specific approved programs here in the state of Connecticut, and it can be a bit overwhelming, you know, when you're first getting started, trying to figure out, okay, which program is right for me? And that's where Teach Connecticut can come in. We can help guide you either through an advising call, an email, you know, whatever you need and whatever your questions are. We're really here to help you move forward in your pathway.
Well, unless my timing or my timeline in my head is completely wrong, you've been an advocate for and affiliated with Teach Connecticut long enough that perhaps someone whose path you crossed in your first few weeks or months in being affiliated with Teach Connecticut actually answered the call, and by now, some years later, they're actually teaching.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's such a great, great thing to see. We do have, you know, prospective teachers who contacted us years ago, and every now and then they'll touch base and check in with us, email us to let us know that they are, in fact, in a classroom. And, you know, it's so great to see where we have such a shortage right now, not only in the state of Connecticut, but across the country. So anytime, you know, we have teachers who are entering in, and we've been pretty successful with that. Our program has been, you know, really successful with that. So we've got a lot to be proud of.
We hear so many stories on For the People about organizations that try to connect folks from outside the academic world to students and organizations within it, you know, whether it's Junior Achievement or so many others. But can you talk a little bit about and directly to people who are bringing the expertise of other careers to bear, becoming educators, and then delivering the entire package to the students that they are inspiring?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And so many of the people that I've spoken to as a Teach Connecticut advisor and a pathway coach have really started in a different career. And that's actually how I got into teaching. I started as a research scientist, actually, and then transitioned into teaching. And so, you know, with that being said, I think it's such a great opportunity for people who already have those life experiences to be able to then come into a classroom and really share those experiences and that skill set with their students, you know, and it's really making those real world connections. So when I, you know, as a science teacher, when I was in the classroom, I would describe, you know, all of these different experiments that I used to do and how much I learned and how that connects to what it is that my students are learning. So they can really see, you know, that real world connection. And you know, that's one of the greatest things about doing Teach Connecticut, because you're really trying to connect people who have a passion for their content, their area of expertise, to be able to then go in and share that passion with students in a classroom. And that's, you know, one of the great benefits of this program.
So in the last couple minutes that we have, and, you know, obviously this is going to be, you know, kind of a crash course in terms of the information, but can you quickly give folks a little bit of an idea? Say they hear this program, they're like, okay, that's it. I'm taking the plunge. I'm going to teachconnecticut.org, and I'm going to see about maybe making this happen. Can you talk briefly about what the expectation should be in terms of once they make connections with your organization and begin the process to the time when they are actually trained, certified, and in front of students? I mean, are we looking at years here before the magic actually happens? How does that all work?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So it really depends on the educator prep program and the candidate's background experiences. Some people may already have teaching experiences, whether it was 10 years ago or, you know, more recently. So if you have some teaching experience and you've been a full-time teacher in some capacity, usually the minimum requirement is about 2 years. You can then become certified to teach in the state of Connecticut without that educator prep program. But most people fall into the category of, okay, this is what I've been doing. You know, for example, I'm you know, working as a research scientist. How do I then become a teacher? And in that process, you would have to complete what's called an educator prep program. So whatever your content area or expertise area is, you should already have a degree in that area. For example, if you want to be a business teacher, you should have some type of degree related to business, or science teacher, you know, some type of science degree. Once you've got that under your belt, you could then become certified to teach through one of our approved educator prep programs. And really, our prep programs are specific to what we call those pedagogical skills. So what are the skills needed for you to be successful in a classroom? And that's really what the coursework focuses on. And so in terms of the timeline for our programs, we've got programs that range from 9 months from start to finish. We have a program that runs from September through May. So you get in all of your coursework as well as your student teaching practicum. So within a year, you'll be ready to head right into a classroom. Some of our prep programs, more average, I would say around 15 months. So again, just depending on kind of where you are. But what's great about our educator prep programs is they really look at your transcripts and your background, and they can help you decide on a program that meets your specific and unique needs depending on your schedule. So there's a lot of flexibility. There's online classes, there's weekend classes, and you can take, you know, these courses full time. And there's also some programs where you can do, you know, as you know, as quickly or as slowly as you want, depending on what your, you know, specific needs are.
Excellent. Well, we'd ask people to keep their ears and eyes open for the huge PSA splash that's happening right now, titled "The Future Depends on Teachers." Certainly, there are many opportunities here in the state of Connecticut for folks who may just be starting out, or who want to transition in, or who may have been teachers in the past and are now in the private sector, but may want to go back. It all starts at teachconnecticut.org. And as you heard, that organization is currently staffed by exciting and inspiring people like Lauren Danner, our guest this morning, Teach Connecticut Ambassador, former Connecticut Teacher of the Year, as well as a North Brantford Teacher of the Year, scientist who came to the field. And we thank you for your inspiring information, as always, Lauren, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Thank you so much. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.